people who have nothing, just like in the Vietnam War, who almost have nothing, are the bravest. They can have the least taken from them, and they will be the most outspoken. But the people that have a lot to lose are really frightened now. I mean, when I was listening to you talk and the lawyer talk, I mean, actually saying that jurors were afraid, I think the smell of fear is like a stench in this country.
Yeah. I hear you, although I think it's also true that there is a reaction coming. I mean, you heard me reading, if you were listening at the beginning of the show, about the massive numbers of people who don't think war is justified in Iraq at the present time, and that's from a conservative poll with rigged questions.
But we're going to go to Iraq. Make no mistake.
Well, the government is, that's for sure.
Right, and no one is listening to us, the people who supposedly run the government. And being an adult during the Vietnam War and seeing the many things that happened, I mean, but they were scattered. There were things like Kent State. You know, we had our own Tiananmen Squares here. But now I feel like it's no holds barred with this Homeland Security.
Yeah.
I feel like everyone who speaks out against the government is an enemy of the state. Look at, look at the decision on your court case when you were sitting in at City Hall, where the judge tells the public that they really have no right to approach local lawmakers. That they shouldn't even be in their offices. I can't remember how it was worded, but it was as if you could write letters or email them, but you were basically just asking for it if you thought you actually had access to them.
It was a mixed bag, although the injunction was dissolved, so we won actually officially, but you're right, Judge Stevens did say that there would be other questions about how, if we stayed in the offices during business hours, in the public waiting area, that there was something wrong with what we were doing in terms of the way the protest went. He wasn't entirely clear about it,
but he
expressed sympathy for Fitzmaurice and the others who wanted to get us out.
Yes, and I think he even offered to let them know what they needed to do so that that couldn't happen again. They just didn't have the right signs on their office, wasn't that it? The right warnings?
He said that, I mean, what they did do is they put up decorum rules thereafter. Actually, it was before Stevens' decision. They have a whole set of decorum rules, and indeed, I was arrested under those decorum rules in November in a subcommittee meeting where Ed Porter had held a meeting around the downtown ordinances, and I wasn't arrested actually for, you know, talking. I was arrested for making a tape recording. But they couldn't bring the charge to court. They would never. I don't think. I could be wrong. If they'll convict Ed Rosenthal, then they might convict me.
See, I think that's where we're at, is that they can bring anything to court. And I think that we have a climate here, locally, statewide, and federally, where it doesn't matter whether it's legal or important. They're going to shut everyone up, and they're going to make examples of them. And I just, you know, this move where at the very top, Bush isn't listening to the other free countries. You know, at first, all the free countries advised against it, all of the allies advised against it. And then I heard on the news the other day that many had signed on to support him, not because they think he's right, because it wouldn't pay to be an enemy of the United States. Well, there we go with the smell of fear again.
That's true, but I think we also have to look at the other side of it, which is that there are, you know, there were hundreds of thousands of people out saying no to the smell of fear.
And oh, I agree. I'm just saying that when we come down on someone because they won't speak out or won't do certain things, I think that you're seeing people so under the...
Well, the reason I criticize Dr. Halpern on this issue is I think he has a good reputation in this community. I think that there need to be people leading on this issue, and I think that the AMA supports them on this issue. So I think that, I mean, and David Beauvais, you heard the attorney, said that he thinks that the doctor's being a little conservative. I'm kind of being a little outrageous by bringing him up by name on the air, but I was kind of shocked at his, frankly, stating he does not give medical marijuana recommendations because of... It seemed pretty thin to me. I don't. No doctors have been prosecuted for this. So the idea that he is afraid of that without it actually happening, I don't think does us a service. And I can understand how you say it could happen, but I would like to see, I think we need to see individuals who are, you know, not just respected, but who are for relatively well off, I would assume he's relatively well off if you're in that professional class, standing up and if not speaking out, I'm not saying he doesn't have to take a podium, but at least getting access, giving people who are sick access to medication. He cannot, you know, cut people off from that, or I think in a way he's violating his oath, he's violating his responsibilities to his patients. And further, I think it's politically a very bad idea for him to do that. I mean, you don't have to be, you know, shouting at the top of your lungs to be doing the right thing, but you have to some extent do the right thing. I mean,
no, and it is sad to see people that have a lot of power. I mean, you know, for the most part, doctors have been like gods in our country. You know, it is sad when people do have some clout and have some power, and all they have to do is write it on a little white piece of paper. You know, and maybe three people will see it when they do the right thing. You know, I know what you're saying. I mean, they have much more clout and power and have probably much more immunity even.
I mean, also, this is Santa Cruz, and we're not talking about Orange County.
Well,
or
yeah, we
the
say
Deep
this
South.
Is Santa Cruz, but look at all that's happened here.
No, but I mean on the medical marijuana thing, I don't think a federal prosecution against any doctor in Santa Cruz could stand. I mean, I think, although, who knows, San Francisco's liberal, but they haven't gone after doctors up there either that I've heard of. They have gone after people, you know, cultivating medical marijuana, but again, they also haven't gone after patients who are using marijuana. They've taken their medicine, but they've never attempted to try them in federal court. That would be a really hard row for the government to hoe. I think they would fail.
The only thing is, Robert, is I think that you see it in very clinical terms, but I think if you were one of the patients here in Santa Cruz, you'd been pulled out of bed by federal agents or sheriffs or whatever during the last thing, you might think twice about things, about how brave you can be. You know, it's all relative to say this is Santa Cruz. You're damn right it's Santa Cruz, and the city council doesn't stand up for anything they profess to believe in, and raids happen, and it is frightening. It's because I think it's even more frightening because this is Santa Cruz. You think, why mess here? I never thought they'd mess here, you know?
There's a lot of hypocrisy in Santa Cruz and a lot of this symbolic bullshit, and as you point out, a lot of fascist activity in the sense of these basic abrogations of rights around city council, the destruction of police review, even the fantasy or fig leaf of the Citizens Police Review Board as police review, you know, and the harassment of activists. And apparently there's some dogs in the background speaking about this issue, too.
Went by.
By the way, while we have you on the line, this is a completely different subject, Roxanne. I know you've been speaking on KSCO on the problems with Child Protective Services and abuses that happen there, and I guess KSCO is the AM station that's at 1080 AM, was looking for new broadcasters, and are you up for that kind of position, or do you have anything that you've learned or said about CPS, any updates on CPS you want to give us while you're on the line?
So what are we talking about, being a host? Or?
Well, I was throwing two things together.
Yeah, I'm kind of confused. Just one thing at a time.
Are you a host?
I'm getting old.
Are you getting hosty? Are you?
No one's asked me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering, because I know KSCO was looking into people like Thomas Levitt. I guess Michael Sammet has appeared more than once on KSCO.
Uh-huh.
And now also, but apparently you haven't been asked back on that. they don't want your kind, Roxanne.
Robert, I have a problem with rejection. Phrase that kindly.
They have not yet sent you a second invitation, but surely that is in the mail as we speak.
They must have just overlooked my name.
Maybe I shouldn't even go into the CPS thing, but it's so rare to catch you on the line that I thought perhaps you might want to.
CPS is just a brief and short thing. I don't even...
Child Protective Services.
I so rarely get to listen to the radio that I had heard that Child Protective Services said that they would go on KSCO as long as, A, there were no other guests, and, B, they could not talk about specific cases because of confidentiality. Now, to me, and I have really wanted to talk to Michael Zwirling about this, no one has ever asked them to talk about specific cases. because the claims are all basically the same. Why? When there is no legal proceeding, no charges brought against a person, they have done nothing that is against the law, can Child Protective Services continue to keep their children, continue to only give them one visit for 1 hour a week supervised with their children, which is a completely unnatural state, for months and months, and often it can go into years. The subjective concerns of a social worker who, you know, let's say in a dirty house case, let's say they go up to a mountain home that where there's lots of animals and children and just lots of real living being done, and they themselves live in an efficiency apartment done in beige and gray in minimalist fashion. I mean, everything is so subjective. And is the children that are removed for dirty house cases, for instance, why is the original documentation when someone goes into the house never questioned in court? And so someone can have Hershey's chocolate syrup rubbed on their wall next to the breakfast table. A social worker can come in and write down that it looks like cat feces. And it's never questioned.
I know you brought this up on KSCO, and you had this sort of CPS person who called in and made the comments that you were that you're essentially reiterating. And you work with a group. You have it's called, what's the name of your advocacy group, Roxanne?
I don't have a group. I run an independent line out of my home for people who receive notices of action from the county regarding their children. Actually, regarding any county service, be it Medi-Cal, they were denied or whatever, I teach them how to appeal it, make sure that they fill out their programs on time, you know, on the, make sure and get it in on time. I am good with words, so many people who, it seems like CPS often goes after people who have had limited education or whatever. And so when they file their appeals to make sure that they're hard-hitting and they question, really get right to the point.
So
but as far as reiterating, I really think it's important to keep the questions to CPS. Even if they're general, they need to be very hard-hitting. And so I don't know if they've come back. I don't know if they've appeared, but I think that with the right questions that even CPS would not be able to really defend themselves.
I believe you have a show coming up on Club Cruise with Becky Johnson. 7 o'clock on Tuesday and Thursday on Channel 26?
Is that on the 21st?
27. I think, I'm not sure whether it's this week or the next. Maybe we can get a call at some point.
I think it's the following one. But anyway, I just think it's important that, because again, this is an arm of our government that's just gone crazy and has taken... I guess the thing that I really don't understand to this day is who gave them the power. I'm still trying to get to that nugget of who told them they were above the law. Because they'll just tell you, we have our own set of laws. When you, you know, when you say, this isn't against the law.
So... Roxanne, is there a number people can call in if they want some assistance? You put out your number publicly, or?
462-5509.
462-5509. And again...
And that number is actually, it's if you're having a problem with CPS, that is a 24-hour line.
Wow.
You know, you definitely just say what the problem is, and I will answer that line. Do you know what I'm saying?
I hear what you're saying.
It's because time is of the essence, always, with CPS. They will move on you on a Friday when you can't get a lawyer, when you have no one to talk to. You can't get a counselor, you can't get anyone. And by Monday, you will be, 72 hours will have passed, and you will be in a hearing where they're taking your children.
Wow. Roxanne, thank you for calling in, and thank you for talking about this medical marijuana situation. I'm hoping we can get a response back from Attorney David Beauvais on this question, which I failed to ask, which is Isn't Judge Breyer guilty of, in fact, some kind of criminal behavior by keeping information from the jury that was vital to the case?
It always happens, you know?
It does.
So thank you so much for airing this, really, this subject and doing it this way, because I really think that we're just on this downhill spiral, and that people who are willing to work on a community level, whatever, maybe they're not willing to go for the federal, but I think that our country needs change at every level right now.
Thanks, Roxanne.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And you're tuned to Free Radio, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I am the Robe. We have another hour and a half left. We've been talking with David Bovee of Berkeley. That was Roxanne Akistapache of Santa Cruz, or Live Oak, who has her own service where she helps people with problems around CPS and other local agencies, particularly concerning children and welfare. Her number is 462-5509 if you want to call her. I tend to get distracted easily because there's so many issues, and I kind of like to use the opportunity when I get people on the line who are good on a particular issue to sort of jump over to that issue. Apologize to those of you who are trying to stick with the medical marijuana issue. Good stuff on the Indie Media website again on this issue, www.santacruz.indymedia.org. You can look for our local situation, which to me is more important than Rosenthal's situation. I mean, Ed, I don't want to belittle it, of course. Ed has got lawyers. There are plenty of people locally who are being harassed and jailed who don't even have lawyers, or whose lawyers are the kinds of 5 minutes before court public defender lawyers that want you to plea bargain and go down the road. And, of course, we have the city council, which has set up a whole set of laws which criminalize medical marijuana locally in terms of letting people find alternatives. They're forced to seek illegal alternatives. They're forced to the levy. We've heard Kate Wells talk about this on the air, Andrea Tischler, and I've heard similar concerns from Theodora Carey and Anita Henry, all of whom are medical providers who are dealt out of the loop by the Santa Cruz City Council, which has a special deal with Valerie Corral and Wham. Pretty bad news. You want to get a hold of City Council and tell them to get off its butt on the medical marijuana issue, not just do the symbolic, we're going to give marijuana to 13 people, but everybody else gets to stand in line as they die in the long line for the 250 spots for Wham. Give a call to 420-5017, 420-5017. That's the City Council's 24-hour line. You can also call Mayor Emily Smiley Riley if you want, 420-5022. That's her direct office line, 420-5022. And you can always give us a call here at 427-3772, 427-3772. Well, I promised you I would also play you some more of the Citizens Police Review Board. I'm going to kind of delay that briefly because I'm hoping that there might be a few more calls around the issue of the medical marijuana thing with the conviction of Ed Rosenthal. Don't know if that's going to happen. We may have sort of seen that. That may have come and gone. The Citizens Police Review Board, I'm going to begin talking about that now, though, and then play you the last 45 minutes of a lengthy interview with chair of the former Citizens Police Review Board, Mark Halfmoon, African-American man. The vice chair is also African-American, Brent Faust. And I'm going to try to play you some cuts from the Santa Cruz City Council's final debate. I listened to it briefly this morning. I was lucky enough to get a video of it. And it was very interesting. The City Council, on the evening of the 27th of January, at this Tuesday City Council meeting, they kept everyone waiting in the room, the overwhelming majority of people there for the Citizens Police Review Board, while they worked on a planning permit for an hour. Then they spent 12 minutes on the Citizens Police Review Board Item 23 staff report. They gave 45 minutes to public input, although they cut public input short to 2 minutes per person, and the only reason it was a total of 45 minutes was that Chair Halfmoon insisted on taking more time, as did former Mayor Crone, in violation of Riley's zip-it-through approach. And There was no real time provided for a full staff report on the proposal, because the Citizens Police Review Board itself, which would have been to some extent the staff here, because they're the ones who've been considering the so-called auditor model, which is what this resolution is about. The resolution that the City Council proposed and passed with virtually no modifications was a proposal to shut down the CPRB in 2 days, well, it was now 2 days ago, on January 29th, to set up have the Budget Advisory, Ad Hoc Budget Advisory Committee of City Council look into an city auditor model and turn over all cases to Bob Aronson, the attorney for the Citizens Police Review Board, and let him and pay him to look at the rest of the cases and essentially shutter the entire board, close it down, cut it off from the cases it was investigating. The only citizen oversight of the police department, pathetic and essentially ineffectual as it's been, nonetheless, as I've mentioned before, the board was moving to make demands on the police department and on the city council for ending racial profiling, for ending selective enforcement, for demanding a use and display of force policy where every time a police officer pulled a weapon, it would be a written report made so that could be investigated by the police review board to see if it was appropriate, even if there wasn't an arrest made, which doesn't seem to be the case now. Belcher was stonewalling that for a year. There would be mandatory investigation of mandatory hearings and investigations on all serious complaints. That was something that the board was trying to get. They were also trying to get a full investigation into the Raymond Quinton slaying. That was the man shot dead by police, supposedly for firing a shot from a weapon as he sat in a car near Radio Shack a year and a half ago. But the rumors began circulating that the weapon he had was inoperative, so the shot didn't come from his weapon, and they let him bleed to death. I think Mark Halfman may be talking about that in some of the discussion here, his interview. We heard the first half of this long interview, which I recorded a few days ago, and it was quite a good interview. I encourage you to stay tuned for it. Also, again, referring back to this city council meeting on Tuesday, they allowed 45 minutes for public discussion, and then they spent an hour and 45 minutes, to me, preening and posturing and making no substantive changes at all in a prefabricated recommendation that came out of their ad hoc budget advisory committee, to which the Citizens Police Review Board members were not invited or even informed that the meeting was happening, nor were any members of the public informed that the meeting was happening, as far as I know. I spoke to Emily Riley about this on Friday. I said, you know, did you hold the meeting? She said, well, yes. I don't remember much about it. And I said, well, were members of the public invited? She said, well, I'm not really sure, you know. And I got this kind of nervous series of answers from her, and then she said, well, she would try to get back to me with more specifics. And then when I said, and also at our public hearing, since you were not only closing down the board on the 29th, you were not only turning everything over to Bob Aronson, but you were also changing the law so that the Citizens Police Review Board law would be gone. When you change a law in this community, when you change a law under our legal system here, it has been standard for members of the public to get 3 minutes to speak on a legal change, which is a serious matter when it's put into law, and 5 minutes if you're an organization. Yet, Emily Riley's first two public hearings on laws, the downtown ordinances on January 14th, well, actually on two occasions, on December 10th and on January 14th, and the Citizens Police Review Board change on January 27th, the abolition of the Citizens Police Review Board law, she gave people 2 minutes each, and she gave organizations zero time. She just sort of blithely snapped her fingers and did what she was, essentially, what she was saying was she had to do that because she wanted to give the council time to talk. But on both these occasions, the council's talk essentially involved passing prefabricated resolutions that didn't involve any meaningful change. What they were doing was they were engaging in campaign speeches to the community to somehow cover their butts. They were making blather, if you will, in order to persuade people that they were being reasonable instead of having any real discussion on the issues. And this is really most evident in the Citizens Police Review Board situation, where, and the debate goes on for, The posturing goes on for an hour and 45 minutes. With each council member, they're arguing. What they argue about is really kind of strange, because they don't make any changes in the recommendation that, again, came out of a closed backroom process, probably from the city manager's office. It's really kind of unclear where. It's certainly not from the Citizens Police Review Board. They weren't even there. So I think what I'm going to try to do is see if we can actually get the city council tape working here. This is always a question, but let's see what we can do. This is the very end of the city council meeting, and let's see if we actually hear it.
Maybe 6 months, but the intention was...
Yeah, we can hear it then.
Put it in a contract form, and then
90 days.
Write an ordinance that works for the council.
Dick Wilson.
That reflects your intent.
The minutes reflect 90 days.
90, okay.
You can, now what you
Any
hear is Emily
questions?
Call Half
Ed
Moon.
Ed asked mine, so I have no further questions. Mark?
Well, maybe this was asked at some point, but
the
motion requests that the CPRB members provide input to the committee regarding development and implementation of the auditor city council model. And I believe we've gotten correspondence from some past members of the CPRB, and perhaps, and we've heard testimony from other members. But is this an open-ended thing, or do we expect, are we asking this to take place within the next 30 days or the next?
I think my understanding of that was that within that 90-day period that we're talking about, that we're requesting that the current or previous members of the CPRB and others, members of the public who want to comment and provide input for how we would restructure things is welcome. In the letter that I wrote to the Citizens Police Review Board, I asked them to do that.
But what, of course, Riley is not saying is that first, a week before, she cut off two-thirds or more of the funding for the board, and then during this meeting at which she's speaking now, which is last week, she is destroying the board. So before any new model has been set up, she's destroying the old model. And she is acting as though there's some reasonable and legitimate process going on, when in fact what's happening is a city council ratification of what looks like a city manager police department decision to get rid of a board that they've always regarded as a threat and a thorn in their side. Though why they have that idea, I don't know, because the board essentially has been either powerless or refusing to use most of its powers. I suppose they're concerned because recent actions by the chair and the vice chair, as I said, have expressed some concerns about racial profiling and selective enforcement. A resolution to that effect on selective enforcement is actually supposed to go before city council. Riley has essentially been violating city council procedures by not bringing it before the city council. Ed Porter passed a resolution a year ago which required all commission resolutions to either go to city council or be returned to the commission with a note from with some kind of written response from the mayor, and that has not happened. So she's not been, well, the question of whether, I'm not quite sure of the time limit, so I don't want to say for sure that she has violated any kind of policy per se, but it looks like she's certainly taking her sweet time. This resolution was passed on December, early December, and we're now in early February, and it hasn't hit a city council agenda, the motion that the police department should act, should not selectively enforce laws, that they should be fairly enforced against everyone, or they should not be enforced, period. That there does not be an opportunity for the police to pick and choose what laws they use to go after the people they want to go after. That's not the way we proceed, supposedly, in a democracy, though in fact that is the process that's used in downtown Santa Cruz by the police department. So, you're listening again to the final minutes of the city council after, again, muzzling the public, not refusing to hear from the Citizens Police Review Board, bringing up a prefabricated resolution that was cooked up in private by a committee that nobody knew was meeting, and now they spend an hour and 45 minutes gabbling about this resolution that they don't change, and here for a brief moment, you'll hear Mark Half Moon come back and ask them a question, which you'll then hear their response to. And again, the question has to do with the whole rationale for this action of destroying the Citizens Police Review Board is to save money. But the amount of money they're going to spend will be more because an auditor model costs more than a volunteer citizen model. You have to pay a fancy professional in an auditor model, whereas volunteers, all you need is a staff member or two. And the board has volunteered to continue working without a staff for free. But what is the reaction of the city council? Well, you'll hear that.
We'll hear some of it tonight, and over the next week or two, we'll set up a meeting and begin to talk to people. And
great.
So that's my understanding.
Great.
What that means. And any other questions? I'd like to hear from the public then. How many people would like to address us? Okay, so we'll take 2 minutes apiece. I'd like to, the gentleman standing in front of me is the current chair of the CPRB, so I'd like to ask Mark if you wouldn't mind speaking for 5 minutes. You're welcome to do that. I would like at this point at least to ask any other members of the CPRB to speak directly after Mark, if you would like, if you're currently on the commission, maybe for 3 minutes, and then we'll hold other comments to two.
And I beg your pardon, I thought I had this queued up an hour and a half later. I don't. I guess what I was doing here was I was giving you an opportunity to hear Mark Halfmoon's statement, and you'll be able to hear that. The final disposition of this, as I said, is to pass the recommendations unchanged after this phony show process of having a public hearing that they aren't listening to or dialoguing with any members of the public or even the Citizens Police Review Board or even answering the questions. Mark Halfmoon's question was, how can you be saving money if you're actually spending more money? And the answer of Mayor Riley and all the others was to simply ignore every single thing Mark had said and to just proceed to pass the resolution. He was politely treated like the house nigger. I mean, that's pretty much what happened. And he sort of acknowledged that. He said he talked about it. He felt like it was a form of a sort of a racial insult that they were turning over functions to a wealthy white attorney, a wealthy white professional, who is a nice enough guy, but who is not a citizen, who has not been on, who is not a, you know, the kind of citizen who is arrested by police or knows the experiences of people on the streets who face those kinds of situations. And the interesting thing about this process is the city council pays absolutely no attention to anything he has to say. And I'm sorry I don't have that queued up as I should, but it's just amazing to listen to. There's actually a tape in the library if you want to hear it. They just are proceeding with so standard a prefabricated agenda that it kind of takes your breath away. They have absolutely, I mean, he'll ask a question, he'll just sort of say, well, thank you, Mark. You know, now what were we saying before? And then they go back to what they were talking about before. I'll play a little of what Mark said to the board, and then I'm going to go into the interview directly that Mark had with me, because I think he feels free to be a bit more candid, and he has more time to speak. If you want to call in at any point during this discussion, 427-3772 is the number to call.
Thank you, Mark.
Hi. First, I wanted to ask...
Mark, would you identify yourself, please?
Okay. About the time. Things I want to say, I don't want to rush through, as I have before in the past when I come to speak before this board, because a lot of what I have to say gets misunderstood. So I would like to ask, I'll keep it as brief as possible, that you not limit my discussion, because the council is going to have some discussion. It's going to be unlimited, and you have not heard from us at all.
Okay.
So... Mayor Riley, members of the Santa Cruz City Council. My name is Mark Halfmoon. I am the chair of the Citizens Police Review Board, which I was appointed to by then-Mayor Christopher Crone. And I had an interest in becoming a part of the Police Review Board because of the fact that I had a personal situation, which caused me to have to go to the police to address it. It involved unfair treatment by the police. And I finally, through my own efforts, got a meeting with the chief and explained the situation to him, and he listened to me very politely, and he said his resolution of the matter would be that he'd find out, he'd get to the bottom of it, and he'd get back to me. He'd call me back and let me know. That was 2.5 years ago, and I've never heard from Chief Belcher since then. So I want to give you some background on why I even got involved. And I also have to tell you from the top that I've known most of you folks for a long time. But I have to say that I feel insulted and disrespected. That has to do with the fact that a lot of these decisions, I've heard some talk and read talk in the paper about being courteous to the employees, which I think you should be, and let them know that they're going to have to be, you know, moving along from their job. But as volunteers who have worked over the last year, and particularly over the last 6 months, volunteered at least 20 to 40 hours a week studying as we were instructed by the council in June to study other models and find one that would work and be more effective. We've put in a lot of hours, a lot of time. We've read books. We've gone to conferences. We've conferred with people, experts in different areas. And we formed an ad hoc committee. The ad hoc committee for Santa Cruz model finally gave its report on January 13th, the last month of its existence, on what we believe a more effective model should be. We gave that report here, and we're planning to forward it to council. And after doing that much work and spending that much of our time and energy doing it, it feels bad for decisions to be made. And we're volunteers. I understand the feelings of you don't want staff members to find out in the media, but I had a reporter come up to me and ask me questions about it, and it made me feel bad, and I'm not sure if that's what you meant. And a lot of the things I've been seeing in the press lately cast a bad light. A lot of people who don't know what we do, if they read the Sentinel and other newspapers and quote some of the make some of the quotes that they've made of some of the members here, council members, they would feel they'd have a completely different picture of what the CPRB is. Now, first of all, one of the things I want to address that some people have been led to be against the CPRB because they've been calling it, and newspapers called it too, a forum for anti-police activists to harangue the police. If you've come to any of our meetings, if any of you have come to any of our meetings, and a couple of you have, you'll see that that is definitely not the case. It has not been the case. I respect the free speech of members of the public, and they have wide latitude to speak during that time. It is not a forum. It is not run by somebody else. We are firmly in control of it. One of the things that we were going to report in our report, in fact, I should let you know what that is. We, after talking with people nationwide and doing a lot of study and reading, we found that some of the things that are crucial for having police oversight, and I've heard members here say that they believe in the concept, but some of the things that are crucial to have is that the oversight apparatus or a board or person must have some investigative powers. They need to be able to ask questions. People have accused the Citizens Police Review Board of being ineffective and us of concurring with the majority of the police chief's findings. That's true because of the way the board was structured. It was structured to be a rubber stamp. I found it to be that way. And what happens is that, in case you don't know, you might, the police, we get a complaint, it goes to the police department, they conduct their investigation, which may take 6, 8, 9 months or longer. And after they get done, after the internal affairs department gets done, they give their findings to the chief or deputy chief, at which point that person makes findings on it and sends it to us. Then we review the findings of the internal affairs folks. That's one side of the issue, and that's why I think investigative power, whether it be some independent investigator who's an ongoing part of review, is necessary, because we need to have more than that, and I'll tell you why. The reason is because the reports that we receive are not accurate. I don't know if it's through incompetence or through some kind of some purposeful action. I don't know. But on the cases where we look at and we follow up the information, like request tapes and try to back it up, there's some really significant things that are altered in the reports. And there needs to be an investigation. I'm not here to tell you that the police are running wild through the streets of Santa Cruz beating up people. I mean, I was born and raised in Philly, and I've seen police abuse, what it really is. What I'm saying is that I do believe in these Ashcroftian times where there are going to be more protests, and there are going to be things like that, that indeed the police do need, despite what they say, they do need to know that there are people who are representatives of the community, because many of the police officers don't live in the city of Santa Cruz and may not have the attachment that we residents have, they need to know that residents, citizens of the city, are looking over their shoulders. You talked about why these particular cuts are needed, and that's a budget issue. I look through the budget back during the budget time, and I really have a difficult time believing that that this council can seriously be in favor of the concept of oversight of the police, just as we're in favor of oversight of the money. We're talking about people's lives, and still at the same time give funding to the police department, $114,000 for vehicle abatement. Is that an essential safety service? The police department has nearly a $1 million budget for community relations. Can that be decreased or cut on any level? Are those essential services? That's what we keep hearing. We talk about an auditor model, and in our studies of auditor models, if you're going to have an effective system of auditing by a person, let me use the example of the city of Berkeley. The city of Berkeley is roughly twice the size of Santa Cruz. They have slightly less than twice the number of police officers as Santa Cruz. Their citizen oversight budget is three times the budget of Santa Cruz. And they have an investigator. They have one full-time investigator and one support staff person. For the city council to make decisions about which cases are... another thing that made me angry was reading about frivolous cases. I don't believe that in the year that I've been on the board, I've seen one frivolous case. There's been cases that have been unfounded and not enough evidence to back up, or maybe misguided or whatever, but I don't consider any complaint to be frivolous. If you, the city council, is going to be making the decisions about which cases are important, it takes on a really political nature. Now, I know we're all appointed by politicians, but we differ in our opinions of things than politicians do. A lot of people have been criticizing the Police Review Board, and when I got on it, I heard a lot of this criticism, and it kept going on. But a lot of these people now are supporting the CPRB, not because they're jumping the fence, but because they've seen effective change happening. You have charged us with bringing about effective change and making the board effective. And as we are in the middle of our work doing this, suddenly we're told, it doesn't matter what you think. It doesn't matter what your report is. It doesn't matter what you've learned. We don't even want to hear it. We're not going to invite you to meet with us about some other model. We're not going to invite you to find out what you learned the city paid $3,000 for to send us back to Boston. We don't care. We've already decided on this auditor council thing, and I think that's disrespectful. We do have people come up, and I believe that we are supposed to give respect to the public and when people speak to us. And so if people hear folks come up and criticize the police, that's because they have the right to free speech, and we allow them to do that. Sometimes I feel like we're treated like children, like you don't trust us. Now, the vice chair and myself have been working quite a bit of time. We have experiences. He grew up in South Central Los Angeles. I grew up in North Philly. So as I said, we know what police abuse is about. And Santa Cruz is not like those places where we grew up. However, we have an interest in it. We see it. We have young people who come to us and who refuse to file a complaint because they're going, I'm not going to get up in front. I'm not going to become a target for the police. You guys can't protect me. And these things do occur. And I believe that communication is two ways. And we've tried everything that we've tried to do. You've talked about us bringing forth procedures and policy recommendations. Everyone that we forwarded to the chief of police, the city manager, we've never heard anything about it. We've never even got a response. And so what I'm saying is that the ineffectiveness that you guys are talking about is built into the structure of that board that you created. There's a list of things that I have that I think are required to have an effective board. If just because people are not getting beaten on a daily basis, does that mean that we don't have to have a deterrent? Are we going to wait for Rodney King to get beaten on the street before we say, oh, I think we need to look at the police?
Could you finish up so other people have a chance as well?
I will finish up, but as I said, there's a great deal of things I would like to say to you because I never had the opportunity to. If you want to have oversight of the police, what we found, you have to pay the price that it costs. When the police department wants a police car, and they go to the dealer for an effective police car, one that has four-wheel drive, can hold a shotgun, a computer, and lights and sirens and everything, the guy says, okay, it's $30,000. So you pay the $30,000 because you want an effective police car. You don't go to them and say, we only got $750. We want a police car. You'll get like a 88 VW Fox like mine, which is like, doesn't start right now. I'm also disappointed that during my watch, during the time that, and I can't help but I have to address something that's on my mind, and I know how people usually respond to this kind of thing when I bring it up. And we are, the vice chair and myself have been the most active in forming a new form of citizen oversight.
You, but everybody, including the poor people in the community, including Mexicans and blacks and gay people, everybody in the community. It means just what it says, community policing.
Look at this case, the Norman Friedberg case, which I was not a percipient witness to, but I did interview six people who were and read numerous accounts of others who witnessed this incident at the Food Not Bombs meal in the afternoon of a late June day. The issue primarily, as I understand it, was the failure to recognize the authority of a police officer, the lack of respect for the badge, the gun, the ticket book. And that seemed, I mean, that is my analysis. Perhaps, I mean, you're the one who read the IA files, and you're now under arrest for revealing anything in secret, of course. But you can, you know, was that the core of the case, respect? Or lack of respect. I mean, the idea that we will punish you if you don't have the right attitude seems to me to be behind numerous stops on Pacific Avenue, certainly of poor people, of performers, and possibly of young people and others.
Well, I think that's correct. I do not believe that, looking at this situation, Dave Rowan has a phrase for this back when he was a police officer. They called it glorifying a misdemeanor. In this case, glorifying an infraction. This man was accused of littering by throwing breadcrumbs on the sidewalk, which may have been picked up by birds anyway, but even though he walked away and initially refused to pick them up, he was convinced by Food Not Bombs people to pick them up, which he did pick them up. Why not let him pick them up and say, please, sir, don't do that again. It causes a mess on the sidewalk, and chances are the guy wasn't going to do it again. I mean, who knows? I don't know. But the point is, why make the next step? Okay, you must be punished. Even though I ordered you to pick them up, you ultimately followed my order, even though it took some convincing by other people. But I'm going to give you a ticket anyway. And then the guy walks away, and the situation escalates from an infraction, littering, to a violent encounter with cops getting judo kicked and knocked to the ground and beat up. And this guy, I guess they tried to hit him with a stick, but no, he beat the shit out of him. And
you keep saying that's not the report I get from the Noah's Bagels witness.
Did you talk to him?
From Randy. I was unable to talk to him, but you weren't able to talk to him either.
No,
you
I didn't.
I got a police report on that.
All I could do is...
The biased IA report.
You got
potentially biased.
You know what? You have a point there.
Yeah.
That is where I got the information, quotes from him, and I have no tape recording to hear his voice saying those things, so I am suspicious enough of the IA investigation process to feel that, you're right, you got a point.
No, this wasn't the only violent incident downtown. There were at least three other violent incidents which I heard of that caused me sufficient concern that I either mentioned them in literature or mentioned them on the radio, and I didn't bring them to a complaint because I didn't have enough detail and enough independent witness testimony that I thought it was worth doing, because even with the Friedberg case, as you saw, I couldn't get you to vote for an independent investigation, even though you obviously felt it was an important case in some respects. And so throughout the tenure of your time on the board, this is important to me, not because I want to beat a dead horse, it's now a dead horse, the CPRB, and say, why didn't you vote for a public hearing? And of course, I probably will for a while, because I operate on, you know, on override or without an override. But because this shows you how the process can corrupt, constrict, hobble can put blinkers on you so that the most obvious thing is, well, let's talk to the people involved, which is the first thing you should say, suddenly becomes the last thing you say, and it was something that in your entire year on the board you never said in a meeting and never voted for. Is that accurate?
That's correct. And again, I'll say this to you, that there has been something that has come up quite a while ago, a few months ago, that we've been studying for a while, that I thought was very important, and that this was a case that was going to require a public hearing. And as we've progressed in studying this case and getting new evidence on this case, in my mind, that was definitely coming up. And
we're talking about the Raymond Quinton case, the shooting of a man last summer, are we?
We do have to review every case of a shooting, of a fatal, or any kind of shooting by the police officers automatically, and that's the one that is the most recent one, and of course that would probably, you know, if anybody put the map.
Get the case, folks. Go ahead.
Okay, the point of the matter is that a real serious case like that, I think, would require an independent investigation, a public hearing, and not just be brushed aside. I didn't think it was proper to use up the precious little resources in
your political capital, which suddenly dissolved in front of your eyes within a month.
Yeah, well, I don't go for political capital as a concept, but the
see, I believe the more you use the process, the more powerful it becomes, and the more skill you acquire with it, and you can decide when to use it and when not to use it. If you've never used it, you never know when to use it. But we're talking about a whole public hearing issue.
Okay.
There was an issue only when there was a real possibility that the board existed. My question to you, though, is there have been rumors circulating that a man was shot dead after firing a shot from an inoperative gun. Can you please quench these rumors for us and reassure us that our police department would do no such thing?
Well, I can't assure you that the police department would do no such thing. And I personally can't tell you that was the case. I can't confirm that rumor.
You will neither confirm nor deny at this time. And he is not a crook. No, he is not a crook. But there was a man who was in the parking lot, I guess, of Soquel and I guess it's Water Street at that shopping center near Radio Shack, who was shot dead by police. After some kind of a bank robbery suspect.
Yeah.
And he was they sent in a little robot camera to see if he was dead or not. But the claim was, as I understand it from my sources, and you are not that source, by the way, for those who wish to further malign poor Mark, the gun was originally in, they claimed that he fired a shot, and so they peppered his body with I don't know how many bullets.
They were flying all over the place. There were bullets flying all over the place.
But there was seemingly, there's a strange discrepancy here because the gun was found to be, or at least was claimed to be, by other witnesses, inoperative. Any comment?
Well, first I should say that I know that bullets were flying all over the place because I happened to be present at the scene at the time. But I don't know what his gun, what the story is with his gun, whether it was inoperative or not, myself personally. But what I think is crucial about the shooting is that, okay, the job of the police is to, if they have someone to arrest them using whatever force it takes. At that point, they decided that the guy needed to be shot. They shot him, and they then proceeded to let him sit in the van for several hours. And I'm not telling you, this is not anything that's privileged information from the files. This is an eyewitness account from myself and other people who were present there. The man languished in the car. They said he was still a danger, and I had a video camera with a telephoto lens, and the man was clearly, he was fucked up. If he would have had a gun, in fact, I believe there was a point where he had no weapon in his hand at all, and still he was allowed to sit there and languish and die. And if he wasn't dead, and the robot or whatever it was threw a flashbang grenade into the van. Now, sounds pretty benign, flashbang, because it makes a loud noise and it flashes. But those things can kill you, especially if you're in a car or a van.
Or if you're also critically wounded as well.
And critically wounded. So if he wasn't dead when they threw in the grenade, he certainly was dead when they
captured
it. Why is it
this case is being investigated only a year and a half later? I mean, what? And I also know that the police chief tried to take back this case from your files, In fact, this is one of the first times I saw that you and the board went directly to your pal, the city manager. I speak sarcastically. I believe he's more the pal of the police chief, to try to require the police chief to return the file to the safe in the CPRB office when you had a safe and you had files, in order to, so that everybody else might read it. Now I know that. Any comment on that whole situation?
Well, they took quite some time. They took over 8 or 9 months to investigate it, and they had a staff of paid investigators and officers and forensics people, and it took them that long. We are a board of 7 volunteers who most of us have jobs. The office hours are only open from 8 a.m. to 12 noon, Monday through Friday. Most working people can't get there.
I'm not criticizing the board. I'm saying, why did it take 7 months to get this for them?
I don't know why. Whatever it was, with salaries and overtime and investigators and...
Was there stalling involved here?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it just takes that long to investigate a shooting. I have no idea. But we've been criticized for that.
The Happy John Dying was finished in the decision was rendered in 12 hours. The DA made a decision several hours after... Actually, the police chief made a decision in 4 hours. The DA made a decision in 12 hours. And the report was in the library within a month. So I'm kind of wondering why this one took 8 months. I mean...
You
know what I mean?
I believe that there were a lot more shooters involved. I don't know the other case. I'm familiar with it.
There were more shooters involved, yeah.
I'm familiar with it. I've heard of it, but I wasn't living here in Santa Cruz when it happened, so there's a lot that I don't know about that case with Happy John Dine. I've read about it, and I've read reports of it. I've read the files on the case. This one looked like it was complicated just due to the sheer numbers of people and the sheer numbers of bullets fired. I'm not an expert in forensics or anything like that. I can't tell you why it took them so long, but we have come under criticism by the city council as proof that we were ineffective, that it sat on our, they painted this picture of an image of this report sitting on our desk gathering dust for months.
I don't want to go over every canard that the city council, every dead fish the city council drew out in order to distract from what they were really doing, which, as I think most people who are listening to this show already know, which is they were shutting down the CPRB, essentially on request from the police chief and the city manager, using the budget crisis as a pretext.
Okay, but, you know, something I want to get back to is when I talked about the hours, what I was getting to, the office hours, since that was an inconvenience, we requested that we be given keys to the office, board members, so that we can go in there even when staff wasn't working. We have 2 part-time staff people, and they seem to work during the same hours. Nothing against them, but the fact is that we can't all get in there during those hours. And we wanted keys to the office and the combination to the safe so that we could read the files. We were told that we couldn't have that only city employees could. Now, we had to swear an oath, you know, upholding the Constitution and that we wouldn't give away any confidences. And also, it says in the bylaws of the CPRB that you have to be a trustworthy, respectable citizen to get there. So why would they not allow us to have access to the files?
Nothing to do with your skin color, certainly.
They wouldn't trust us, right? So my question comes to this. If they wouldn't allow us, and everybody on the board is not black, but the chair and the vice chair happen to be. And the fact of the matter...
Used to be.
And they would not give us those things. We requested them, and we requested longer hours, and they gave us alternatives that were unacceptable to us, like make an appointment with Sergeant McMahon at the police department. We don't want to work at the police department. We were independent of the police department, and we don't want the inconvenience of having to make an appointment around the schedule of a police sergeant who doesn't support our work. So what happened is that it takes a long time to read these things. They won't give those things to us. There won't be a staff, but there will be an auditor. Are they going to give him the key to the office and the combination to the safe? And why is he more trustworthy than us? Is it because he's an officer of the court, or is it because he's a white guy? And that's different. A white guy asking for the key and the combination is different than a couple brothers saying, hey, man, can we have your keys and your combination of your safe?
No, thank you. Actually, I think the answer is, the claim you might get is, well, if you have 7 keys and 7 combinations, that's different than one individual having access. And besides, he only comes down once a month. You guys will be using it at different times.
Oh, really? Once a month? Is that
I don't know. I'm assuming, there aren't that many complaints. Why would he need to come down more than once a month in order to look at the 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 complaints that are left?
Well, there's more complaints coming through. More complaints have been filed. The vice chair has filed a complaint.
Oh, really?
About what? Well, I don't want to talk about his complaint.
Secret complaint?
Well, no. It's up to him to talk to you about it. But I think that, there may be some complaints that I may have to file myself. I'm not sure but I may, there's some things that I may, speaking of the auditor model, I had an incident at the San Jose airport where I was kind of jacked up by the police at the airport, and who tried to frame me and accused me of being a terrorist, if you can believe that or not. And you know what happens to suspected terrorists in this society today and how many rights they have? Well, I filed a complaint with the auditor's office in San Jose, and since I live in Santa Cruz, I filed it over the phone, and he tape recorded the filing.
San Jose police officers, not against Federal Aviation Authority or marshals?
That's correct, San Jose police officers.
The nature of your complaint?
Well, I was going to fly to Boston to go to a conference of the National Association of Civilian Oversight of Law Enforcement to represent Santa Cruz, to learn how to make an effective model in Santa Cruz. And while we were going through the X-ray machine,
They found your weapon of mass distraction?
They found a little gadget I had that...
A box cutter, perhaps?
It was actually a little... it's shaped like a credit card, and it has a magnifying glass, a compass, a ruler, a bottle opener, and a little knife blade about an inch and a half long.
Ah!
It was in my date book, it's been there for...
You sealed it in your date book?
No, it had been there for over a year. I hadn't even pulled it out. I forgot it was there. I even told the vice chair on the phone, I said, make sure you don't have anything sharp when we go through this thing, because, you know, the two of us going through there, they'll probably jack us up. So they pulled me aside for that, and I've seen them do that with people before. They wouldn't pull them aside and say, sir, you can't take this on the plane, you're going to have to leave it here. Mm-hmm. And I've seen people with sharp objects before, and even on that very same trip. Or they'd say, here, you can mail it to yourself, or we'll hold it here at the airport for you. They treated people politely. But with me, they pulled aside. I had five officers around me, and they kept asking me, why are you attempting to smuggle a weapon on board an airplane? I'm not trying to smuggle a weapon on it. I forgot I was there. Look, guys, I like that thing. I paid $20 for it way back, and I like to keep it, but, you know, I got to make this flight, and if you got to confiscate it, I understand. But they kept me there until I missed all the flights of the night, and then one of the officers approached me dangling another knife and saying, well, why were you trying to smuggle this weapon on board the plane? And I said, man, come on. I've never seen that in my life, and you know it, don't you? At which point he turned away. Now, Vice Chair Fowles saw him bring that blade up toward me, and that's significant because when I mentioned the fact that other people had gone through with sharp objects and they just politely told them they couldn't put it on, what I was told was that it was the second weapon that caused you to be detained. And so the second weapon that I had never seen before. So I did file a complaint with the auditor's office. They interviewed me over the phone. The next thing I know, I get a phone call from the Internal Affairs of the San Jose Police Department, and he's got the tape recording. The auditor's office didn't tell me they told me I was being tape recorded, but they didn't say they were going to turn over the recording to the police department. It was now their property, and they don't give out transcripts. And they called me and said, well, we can't advance with your complaint until we meet with you in person, and you identify the officers with a photo array. And I said, I don't remember all those guys. While I was there, I asked each one of them for their card, their badge number, and I got those things. That's evidence enough. That person gave me his... I looked at it, the badge number on the card matched the one on his shirt, and he's the guy. It doesn't matter what they look like on the photo. And I doubt if I could really, honestly, pick those guys out of a lineup, a photo array, you know, after the fact.
So you're a liar as well as being a smuggler, eh?
And so, essentially what's happened is that those police officers also confiscated an expensive leather bag that I was carrying, and I asked them why. They said, it's evidence. I said, evidence of what? And they wouldn't answer me. And they took my little doodad, my little gadget, and as it turns out, they took one of my press IDs out of my wallet. So I'm really, you know, spooked by this. And they told me they couldn't proceed with my complaint until I did this. Well, on the advice of an attorney, he said, have they filed any charges against you? I said, no. He said, did they tell you whether they were? And I said, I asked them. They said, they can't tell me that it's just evidence, and they'll let me know. He says, well, if they can't tell you whether or not they filed charges, then don't do a personal interview with them. Just file your charge, and you know, you don't have to interview with them, because they would probably use the department would probably use whatever they have, you know, in some kind of prosecution against you. So anyway, I just wanted, but the auditor model there, I think, failed me. The much praised San Jose auditor model.
What's her name?
It's Teresa Guerrero Daly, who I think
it's
is a good
nice presentation. But as I said, the activists over in San Jose that I talked to, when she was beginning, felt that it was a sellout and evaded any kind of citizen oversight.
Yeah, well, I don't know what to say to that because, of course, you know, I've been called a sellout and stuff just being on the CPRB.
No way. Just because you haven't held a public hearing all year?
Yeah, some furry...
Those are radical malcontents for making those kinds of comments. You actually have been doing a fine job, and now you're going to retire to private life.
I am going to get back to my main business, which is media, which is reaching people through media. But I do believe that this city is I have children in this city. I think it's really important. And as I told Mayor Riley in a letter to her, that police abuse of African American children is if you ask African Americans to name their three primary concerns in U.S. society, one of them would be police mistreatment of their children or themselves. And so this is of crucial importance to us. It's very important to me, and I don't intend to just let any kind of the police be unaccountable, to just let it go, even if it's even if it means putting together a community or citizens organization.
Well, I know that on the internet at www.santacruz.indymedia.org, you have posted an article, or somebody did, under your name, which says, "Progressive California City Lays Waste to Police Oversight," by Mark Half Moon, chair of the Citizens Police Review Board in exile. We've seen some stories in today's Sentinel and Mercury News about the killing of the Police Review Board just 1 week after the City Council cut the funding and claimed it was simply into a, quote, restructuring of the Police Review Board. Apparently that restructuring happened very quickly, within 2 or 3 days later, at a secret meeting of the ad hoc Budget Advisory Committee by our esteemed Mayor Riley, Vice Mayor Kennedy, and Green Party stalwart Kim Fitzmaurice. Now, were you invited to these budget meetings? Were you able to give any kind of input?
No, not only were we not invited, even when we tried to get invited and we tried to be a part of it, we were rebuffed. Our phone calls were not returned. The City Council would not meet with us.
And I have to say that when I contacted Mayor Riley, who has returned an occasional phone call or three.
She likes you better than she likes me now.
Well, that perhaps has something to do with my distinguished... When you get to be my age, that's not the story. Nonetheless, when I called her and asked her about this advisory committee, she did not return my call. When I called her and asked her as to how much time would be allowed for the public to engage in this discussion of the final burial and dismemberment of the Citizens Police Review Board, I should say the looting of and the mutilation of the Citizens Review Board, various parts, some money going to Bob Aronson, some parts of the office going to other city departments. She didn't return that call either, and she made no commentary at the city council meeting, which normally, if you're considering legal changes, allows 3 minutes for individuals and 5 minutes for groups. In public hearings, she allowed only 2 minutes per person, though she did give you a little chance to speak, I guess, for the first time, really. I think you're able to you weren't at the previous meeting when they defunded the board. I think you had a family emergency. You had to go out of town. But at this meeting, you tried to make some points, but there was no back and forth, give and take. They had not referred to anything you had written. They had not referred to any reports. Although they did have letters from that well-beloved, long-term, but just resigned board member, Arnie Leff. Any commentary on that?
Well, that really felt bad. What felt bad about it to Vice Chair Faust and myself was that when we put together an ad hoc committee to form a new Santa Cruz model, we asked for people to volunteer to be on it, and if you weren't going to be on that ad hoc committee, give us feedback. Let us know what you want us to hear. Give us, write to us, email us, call us. We got no feedback from members on the board. We did have some conversations with Mr. Leff, but they talked about recommendations from Jim King, who gave us not a letter of recommendation or ideas for a new model. And Dr. Leff did give us, we had some conversation with him, but he didn't give us any solid concrete steps that we could take, and didn't come to any of our meetings, didn't have anything to do with it.
And you wrote a lengthy letter to the board with all kinds of specific suggestions, which I take it you saw for the first time that night.
That's right, and the council referred to that letter a lot, and they referred to Jim King's letter, and sitting in the audience...
another board member.
Yeah.
Actually, the letter from former chair of the CPAB, Arnie Leff, which went to city council, did not go to the Citizens Police Review Board. Leff, about a week and a half before, or 2 weeks before, had resigned from the board after denouncing various critics like myself, Becky Johnson, and others. And the point was, he recommended essentially the destruction of the board, a triage of the board. He gave the city council the kind of inside hook that they needed to take action without any kind of real public process or real discussion with members of the board that were still on the board, or with the chair of the board, Mark Halfmoon, or the vice chair, Brent Faust, or the public, for that matter.
Senile, incompetent attorney under quite a cloud of controversy from numerous quarters in the Santa Cruz community. And I say this with all consciousness of my legal responsibilities as a broadcaster. Mr. King is invited to appear on the air to challenge the various allegations about his A, incompetence, B, a venality, C, is lack of devotion to police review. And I noticed earlier, as a board member of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, his failure to support the rights of homeless people.
Well, what I'm concerned with right now is the fact that neither of these people gave us their input in any meaningful way, and yet the council spent time talking about their recommendations, and you have Vice Chair Faust, myself, sitting there in the council chambers with tons of information, and instead of reading these things, why not call us up and say, what have you found? What are some of the things that we should do? What do you would recommend, since you guys have been studying it for 6 months and giving it all your time, and the city has invested $3,000 in you guys learning this? They paid for us to fly back east and go to that conference and learn the things that we learned and bring back tape recordings and literature.
Sounds like we're still at the, how could you hurt me stage. It's a real stage. Because one comes to these boards, I imagine, with some expectation of respect for which you give work, you give time, you give energy, you give your life, a part of your life, to that work. Under the, not necessarily the conviction that for sure that you're going to get a hearing and you're going to get your solutions and proposals acted on, but at least in some way there will be at least not a complete short-circuiting of the process, as seems to have happened in this case. That said, this is a key time because we are 2 days after the Police Review Board sacrifice, slaying, massacre, whatever you want to call it, the Tuesday night massacre. And
we're going to interrupt this tape because we have a caller who's been listening and has a few comments. Caller?
Hi. I've been listening to the CPRB issue, and when I listened to them talk in front of the city council, everything was a big kiss-up. Well, we're not like Philly. I mean, we really know police abuse. Like, there's gradations. Like, they have to get so bad before, it's really a serious issue. So they were kissing city council standing. Then when you hear them talk, they're just victims. They send these reports in, and they never get any feedback. No one gives anything back to them. Poor them. They're playing both sides of the issue. And, we're left in this stinking position of having to support a really weak, whining CPRB who really doesn't have the courage to demand their records, to go to the public and say, we've demanded, asked, cajoled, done everything we can, and we still do not have these records from the department. They have just sat back, and they're talking like they're just victims of a bad system. In fact, they really don't care that much. They're not very persuasive. They're not, certainly not aggressive. And now we're listening to them whine when people are saying, look, we don't need you anymore. The city council picked a great department to axe because the public's not happy with them, and the police don't want their nose in their business. But no one's very threatened by them. They're just sucking up money. And now all of a sudden they were on the path to being more influential. When was that going to happen? All through this interview, I'd like the public to listen to how they were just victims who were never responded to and weren't invited, and instead of getting up there and saying, hey, you better include us, and going to the public with the information. They had lots of supporters. They never used it.
Well, I agree with you and I disagree with you. I agree with you that I've constantly pressed Mark Halfmoon and told him he has to at least hold public hearings or vote to hold public hearings. He never voted once to hold a public hearing on any complaint, which is a process that's been in the law, a part of the Citizens Police Review Board law until it was repealed, or actually it had a first reading, but it will be repealed in a second reading in a month or in 2 weeks or some such thing. But he never used that process. And
But I want to say this, and you're right. He also never held a press conference, which they did. This is similar to what the Homeless Issues Task Force, with Linda LeMaster and Paul Brindell and Ken Cole and Sherry Connable for a time, and other people who I think are well intended and in their own limited way, some more so than others, put forward and advocate for homeless people. But the problem is they let themselves get deformed, intimidated, and co-opted by the process. That is the problem. Ordinary people, instead of, you saw this to some extent when you were supporting Christopher Crone before he was elected, let's say. You remember that, Roxanne?
Yeah.
And you probably held your tongue at certain points and tried to moderate what you had to say, at least for a period of time, because you wanted to see him get into office. Is that accurate or not?
I don't remember doing that. Maybe you know something or remembering something I don't.
Maybe you didn't. You know, maybe you are really an exception to this, and you are just, you know, unwilling to, moderate.
In those instances, I didn't feel that people showed us their true selves. So I went on what I knew, which I thought was an admirable person at that time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I was finding problems with Crone before he was elected, more so with Sugar and with Fitzmaurice. But, you know, I was willing to kind of put it aside. I mean, we actually had situations where Huff endorsed one of them, the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban endorsed all three, and the Street Shit Sheet refused to endorse any of them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had a kind of a difference of opinion among all those, although, you know, I was on all three of those groups. But I think the problem is that you become a part of this process in any way, and it becomes hard to maintain your independence. That's the reason I tell people I'll never run for city council.
Right.
Even though I don't think that Thomas Levitt sold out, and I don't think that Steve Argue sold out at all.
No,
but
I don't think either.
But you get. I mean, you're first of all. The other thing is your time gets taken up. Mark Halfmoon works full time. He's virtually homeless. He's Brent Faust works all day at a 9-to-5 job. I think he's a bus driver. And these guys don't have any time to do anything.
Well, it's just that I'm listening to all this, and
yeah,
it's like
they were
victims of circumstance, mm-hmm. but they were going to change that, and it's not. I do have criticisms of them. I mean, they can come out now and give us every reason they want to give us, but the point is that it got to this point with the public isn't going to care very much. And also, there's a lot of talk about racial profiling in this interview, which we know that happens, but also know the weakest among us right now, which are the homeless, are the ones that have really been hit, you know, badly, and no one stood up for them. Anyway, I'm going to have a dead battery in a minute, but I just was getting furious listening to his excuses and city council's excuses. You know, they all have the makings of great politicians.
Thank you, Roxanne.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And we're going to continue with that interview. We've only got about 20 minutes left. If you call in, I'll try to zip in your call as well. This is an interview with former CPRB chair Mark Halfmoon. Whoops, well, first we got this. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, this is Mark Halfmoon.
This is that sellout former CPRB chair, Mark Halfmoon.
Yeah, I'm a sellout.
That's the one.
The deal is this, is that the thing is that we're not whining about anything. What we're doing is explaining what the situation was. I was invited to be a part of fixing a problem by working it within the system. And I have a very personal reason for doing that. I've always, all my life, have not worked within the system for political change. But I had a very close friend who happened to be on the flight with Mickey Leland when he went to Ethiopia, who always criticized me for not trying to work within the system. And she died on that flight, and I realized that she died for something she believed in, even though I wouldn't have done it the same way, like working within Congress, right? The fact of the matter is that we did everything we could do within the rules that were given to us, right? Because that was my goal then. Now, of course, I'm not bound by those rules, by the rules of the city council or the city government, and I can do whatever I want. And so I think you're going to get, my involvement is going to evolve with that. And I'm sorry that somebody would think that I just sold out. because I have nothing to gain. I mean, it's not like I'm getting a salary or anything like that. And I'm not afraid of these people, even though they attempt to intimidate me. I'm not afraid of them.
My thought with you, Mark, was that you tended to, as you said, you think you felt you had to, quote, work within the system. But unfortunately, I mean, you know, you also, I think, were very much, you felt very dependent on, for example, Attorney Bob Aronson, who was your city count, your CPRB.
Yeah, I did, because I don't know the law.
And that made you have to proceed
very
slowly.
I know the law, but I'm not a lawyer.
Right, and also I think that, you know, when people like myself would say, demand a public hearing, hold a press conference while you can, you know, you may find yourself out of a job faster than you think. You were sort of saying, well, we're proceeding with all deliberate speed and so forth, and we're doing what we can, working within the process and that sort of thing. And the problem is, I think, as the caller, Roxanne, pointed out, the CPRB was, you know, not only pleasing nobody, but it was putting real police review in a position where it might not recover for the next decade. That's the problem.
I disagree with that. We were moving with deliberate speed, which means speed with deliberation. Deliberating what was the wisest thing to do, as much as we could ascertain that. And the thing is that we were in a position to operate within certain guidelines. That's what I promised to do when I was appointed. I mean, when I was appointed, I promised to use that system to get what we could get, and that's what we used.
But you also promised the community that you would get real police review. Otherwise, why should we bother to support you, come to the meetings, and waste our time doing that, right?
Well, that's exactly what we were trying to do. Like anybody who tries, who goes into a system, we failed to do that, I have to say. You know, we failed to do that. We were shot down by the city council and by the city manager and the chief of police. But
if you were to do it over again, what would you do differently? You were on that board for a year. If you knew what was coming, what would be your first move?
If I knew what was coming, I would have been probably more active, more militant in my demands. I didn't want to appear, like, first of all, as an African-American person, when you get into a situation, you're in town that's mostly white, and you're surrounded by white folks, like, they automatically are suspicious of you. I mean, everybody, probably even you. But they automatically are suspicious of you, so you go by the rules and you try to get to a point where you can use those rules to obtain the goal that you're after, right? But at this point, it's been proven to me that working within the system is not working. It doesn't work because the system is flawed. The system is a fraud. And
a flawed fraud.
And I agree with the sister who just spoke. I mean, it sounds like we're whining and complaining like we were victims. Well, we're not the victims. The community, the city of Santa Cruz and the residents of Santa Cruz, they're the victims. And we were trying to use the tools from within the system to de-victimize the victims and try to, like, give them some. That's why we held the special meeting where we had people come and speak, which the downtown commission and the city council refused to have.
About police harassment, yeah.
Police harassment and selective enforcement in Santa Cruz.
Of course, then you delayed 2 months before doing anything about a resolution, and by the time we got around to
we didn't delay it. What we did is we couldn't pass it. When we received it, I mean, it would be folly to just, like, get something on that day and go, oh, this looks good, let's pass it.
It reached you on October 14th, and you didn't act until your December meeting.
Yeah, right, which, you know, we meet once a month, right?
And then in January, in your last meeting, that issue wasn't even on the agenda, even though the city council had refused to put it on its agenda in violation of their 5.04 commission directive, if I understand.
Well, I wanted 5.04. It on the agenda. What, unfortunately, as you mentioned earlier, I did have a family emergency, and I was out of town.
Right.
And when I got back, our staff person did not put it on the agenda. And that's one of the issues I have, is that we did not have a supportive staff, not have a supportive city council. If we had a staff that was supportive of the, I don't know who hired the staff, but...
The city manager hired the staff. They're good people.
You know, I like those. I mean, they're nice folks. I like them. But the fact is that... What should have happened is that they should have heard the things that we said in the meeting, because we're not paid, they are. They should listen to the things we said that we wanted to do and then present it to us.
Right.
Okay, these are the things you guys said you wanted to do. Do you want it on the next agenda?
But since they weren't doing that as early as a year ago, I guess the caller would probably tell you, you know, your responsibility was to raise your voice, go public, make the demands that would bring the community onto your side. But that's sort of water under the bridge. My concern is, what now? What is your... You've signed one of the letters to that you've written up to the Santa Cruz City Council and to the community, Mark Half Moon, CPRB in exile. Is there a CPRB in exile?
Well, we're building that. And the reason why I'm not going to say that I am the CPRB in exile, because this is not about me. This is about the Santa Cruz community. This is about people. And what I want to do is use all the knowledge and experience and things that I've learned to help form a CPRB in exile. I don't necessarily have to be the chair of it, and I don't even have to be a part of it. I don't even have to be in it. But I need for the people in the community to say that we want this, and if they want this and people are willing to organize around it, I am available with the information that I have and with the history to insert it into the process. I may be a part of it, and I may not.
Have you had much response from the community? I know people
you know,
can...
I guess you did a radio show some time ago where you must have given out my phone number and my email.
Yes.
And I have been getting some responses, and those people I want to respond to soon and let them know and somehow maybe have a meeting at some point where they can come together, a CPRB in exile, and I myself may or may not be a part of it. I'm not attached to being the chair of it or anything like that. I just want... I have a lot of information, and I have a lot of stuff that we've studied about, and the conclusions that we reached, that Vice Chair Faust and I reached, of what would make an effective civilian oversight of the police. The city council didn't want to hear them. That's what's becoming clear to me now. That's why they didn't return our phone calls, and that's why they wouldn't meet with us, because they heard that we announced these things at our CPRB meeting, and that we were going to forward them to the city council. So after that, every time we tried to meet with them, they refused to meet with us because they didn't even want it on the record. They did not want to hear what our recommendations were.
Well, maybe it's time for you to get a whole bunch of people together to go to their budget advisory committee meeting and hold your own meeting right out front where you have essentially some real police review being discussed. But in the meantime, I hate to see us spend 2 or 3 or 5 years or even 6 months arguing about a new form for police review. It seems to me that's work. A lot of that work has been done.
Yeah.
What we need to do is process complaints about the police and carry on the issues that you have been already studying around racial profiling, selective enforcement, and find the solutions that the community needs to impose on the city council.
Well, you know, I have to say that I resent the idea that there are any group of people in the United States today or ever since Africans first landed on this shore that are more oppressed and more victimized by police than African-American people. I mean, there are other people who are oppressed by the police and that system. Latinos, Asians, gay and lesbian people, poor people, homeless people. But the primary target of police abuse has historically and traditionally been black people. Look at Rodney King. Do you really think if a homeless guy had been pulled over on the side of the road that he would have been beaten savagely as a black man?
Oh, yeah, it's happened. But often the homeless person is black, so, you know, what are you going to do? You get it both ways. And I don't know, it's a contest to see who's the bigger victim.
I don't want to get into that either. But
right.
It was raised as a point that that racial profiling, oh, that's all well and good, but we poor people who are homeless are a big issue. Well, I want to say to you that the vast majority of homeless people are not visible, and the police could walk right by them and not know they're homeless. I know this because I did a documentary at one time interviewing people who were what I call the invisible homeless, who are sleeping on people's floors, in people's backyards. Mm-hmm. A woman with 2 children slept in the cemetery because she thought it was the safest place to sleep. And
Often is.
So what I'm saying is that we are visible. We can't hide. I mean, we can walk down the street and we can have on dry, clean clothes and still receive the wrath of racist police policies. And whereas a homeless white person if they did the same thing, you know, put on clean, dry clean clothes and walk down the street, you know, they'd be fine.
We got about 6 minutes left. I wanted to ask you, Mark, first I'm going to give out your phone number so people can contact you directly again. I believe that's 457-9754, extension 1788.
Right.
Again, 457-9754, extension 1788. And if you don't get that, just remember 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF. That's the number for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. If you call and leave me a message, I will get back to you and give you Mark's number, which is, again, 457-9754, extension 1788. Mark, any meetings upcoming that you want to invite people to?
No, I'm not at that point yet.
Okay.
We're still reeling from this latest thing.
I encourage you to try to, I think your last written material on this issue, which I distributed at City Council on Tuesday and then posted on the Indie Media website, was so good. I'd like to see a follow-up from you that covers, A, what happened at City Council meetings, but also, B, the various resolutions that the CPRB brought forward that were ignored by the City Council.
Right. Okay. And also on Monday, on KUSP, I believe at 10:30 at... 10:30 a.m. On a program on KUSP, we're going to be discussing this issue. I will be there, and... Vice Mayor Kennedy will also be there.
Ah!
Yes, that'll be interesting. And also, coming up on Thursday on Cable Channel 27, we'll be doing a program that has something to do with police abuse.
Voices, that's called Voices?
Voices, yeah.
Wow. So again, that's KUSB 10:30 a.m. tomorrow, and Thursday 7:30, Voices on Channel 27 on Cable TV.
Right.
The issue of police review or police... misconduct will be coming up.
My goal on Thursday is to focus on, like, you know, I'm black, you know, and focusing on how the traditional relationship from way back in the days when the slave catchers called patty rollers were abusing our people.